Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Northwest Innovation Works is proposing to build the world's largest methanol refinery in the small southwest Washington town of Kalama. The company aims to use tax breaks, grants, and other forms of financial assistance to build and operate its refinery. In August, Columbia Riverkeeper filed a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit challenging the United States Department of Energy's withholding of information about federal government financial assistance for Northwest Innovation Works. The company's majority partner is a commercial offshoot of the Chinese Academies of Science, which is owned by the Chinese government. Today, we talk with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, about their efforts to uncover government deals to underwrite the fossil fuel industry and attempts by the government to circumvent public access to records of immediate public concern. Jasmine, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start by going back in time and talking a little bit about what is this proposed methanol refinery and who is Northwest Innovation Works.
So the Columbia River has had a bullseye target on it from the fossil fuel industry for the past decade. We've seen proposals for liquefied natural gas export, oil export, coal terminals, and so now it's only sort of a matter of time that we would see more fracked gas and fossil fuel projects, and that's what's happening here in Kalama. So Kalama is a town of around 2,000-3,000 people, located on the Columbia River just south of Longview, and it is threatened by the world's largest methanol refinery. So methanol. The way the company would make the methanol would come in by pipeline as fracked gas. So really the impacts start in the fracking fields of the Canadian and U.S. Rockies. The gas would travel to the northwest on existing pipelines and then to the new facility proposed in Kalama, where it would then be refined into liquid methanol and then shipped overseas on big tankers to China to be used in the production of plastics.
It seems like we've been successfully fighting a lot of coal and oil projects here in the Northwest over the last 14 years, 15 years now since the first LNG facilities were proposed in Astoria. But it's actually not relatively new because some of the first projects that we actually were faced with were these LNG projects. But what is the maybe added challenge of communities trying to stop frack gas projects from being situated in their communities? Why does that seem to be harder than stopping coal and oil terminals?
I think the big challenge around fracked gas export projects is that the extraction doesn't happen here. The extraction happens very far away in places where you and I may not be familiar with. And the way that we extract gas and oil today is not the same way that we extracted gas even a decade or two ago. So the type of technology, this fracking technology, is newer. It's more it's unfamiliar to people, and it's more dangerous. It's more polluting to aquifers and communities surrounding the wellheads at the extraction sites. So we're grappling with a new kind of extraction technology that is more dangerous, but also less commonly known. The impacts of fracking, is sort of a household conversation. But I think to a lot of folks, especially here in the Northwest, where we don't see the impacts of fracking, it is out of sight, out of mind. So we only see what the gas industry tells us or shows us, which is this sort of greenwashed message of, that like friendly blue flame.
In your stove.
Right. And we think, and we're being told it's, cleaner than coal. Well, the science of that is proving that statement to be, more and more untrue every single day. So we have some messaging we're up against. We have, the distance and, but the projects, Kalama, it's a small town. It's hard to sort of get the attention of the surrounding communities because the impact would be in this small town.
Well, about a year ago, I went on Northwest Innovation Works website for the first time, and you think you were going on the website of an environmental organization?
Absolutely, their first foyer into, you know, Kalama's public, you know, space was, you know, wearing with the slogan, you know, like citizens for a green economy. Well, there's nothing green about fracking, and there's nothing green about building the world's largest fracked gas to methanol refinery. And there isn't anything green about, you know, doing all of this to fuel more plastics production. You know, that's a piece where I think we can really build broad understanding and opposition to the methanol refinery, because, you know, even young children can, you know, point to, you know, memories of seeing plastic, you know, pollution at their local beach, in their rivers. Plastics pollution is something that is worldwide understood, and this facility would play a massive role in furthering that problem.
Well, I think that for the last few years, while a lot of us down here in the Portland area and Southwest Washington had our eyes on the Tesoro Savage proposal to build the North America's largest oil by train terminal, we were not paying attention to all this methanol activity that was going on upstate in Washington. And it turns out, actually, Kalama is not the only place where one of these methanol refineries is proposed. And I understand that there was a proposal to build a methanol refinery in Tacoma that was twice as large as the one that's being slated for Kalama. So let's talk a little bit about sort of the history of NWIW, Northwest Innovation Works, here in the Northwest, and why this project moved from being in Tacoma to now being focused in Kalama.
Right. So Northwest Innovation Works originally came onto the, you know, our radar about 4 years ago with three proposals to build fracked gas to methanol refineries. The first was Tacoma, and the Tacoma community, to their credit, you know, stood up and asked very hard questions. Tacoma city leaders, elected leaders, asked very hard questions about the impacts on their water supply, on their air quality, public safety. And rather than answer those questions, Northwest Innovation Works just packed up and left. Their project in Tacoma is completely shelved. The result of that is, you know, Northwest Innovation Works then moved down to Kalama and really doubled down with their effort to build a methanol refinery there. Now, I should note for folks listening in Oregon, which is probably the majority of KBOO listeners.
We've got quite a few in Southwest Washington as well.
Great. Thank you very much, Southwest Washington. There is a proposal from the company to build a refinery at Port Westward, which is near the town of Clatskanie, Oregon. So it would, if built, it would be the same size as what's proposed in Kalama. They haven't begun that permitting process yet, but we are watching that community very closely.
Well, actually, I learned from the time I've been spending in Tacoma that Northwest Innovation Works actually opened an office in Kalama before they ever actually opened an official office in Tacoma. But very early in the process, that office that you and I were by just a few weeks ago when we took our little boat ride to look at the site of where this refinery would be on the Columbia River, that office has been around for several years. And it seems that a lot of the methanol, behind-the-scenes work to get this methanol refinery going was happening a little bit under the radar in Kalama. It seems more so than it was in Tacoma.
I mean, a lot of folks in Kalama were tracking it very closely. They care very deeply about what happens to, you know, their stretch of the Columbia River. It's a beautiful stretch of the Columbia River near Kalama. There's amazing fishing in on the Kalama River, which is only a half mile away from the proposed site. There's great, you know, wildlife habitat. Kalama has beautiful views of the Columbia River. There's a lot of things that people treasure about Kalama, and and members of the community were tracking it very closely. I think what you saw happen on the Lower Columbia over the past couple of years is just this flood of projects. I mean, the Northwest Innovation Works, their methanol refinery is, you know, sandwiched between Millennium's coal export terminal, which listeners have probably been hearing about for the past 8 years, and Tesoro Savage's oil terminal in Vancouver. So there has just been a lot of public engagement around those two fights, which are, you know, successful, and we should be very proud of the legacy that we are building. And now it's time to make sure that, you know, we continue that legacy and don't let, you know, sort of fracked gas slip through. we like to think of the Northwest as, you know, this thin green line. That's a phrase that was coined by folks at Sightline Institute, a think tank based out of Seattle. You know, this thin green line between the West Coast and, you know, all of these, you know, Asian markets that are sort of, or so we're told, are like greedy for our dirty coal and our fracked oil and our fracked gas. And we are holding the line to make sure that the infrastructure that is built in this world, not just in this community, but in this world, is clean and green and, you know, really going to bring us into, you know, our 21st century, you know, climate goals. So we are this thin green line. But we need to make sure that there are no cracks in that line for gas projects to get through, whether it's, you know, Kalama's methanol refinery or Jordan Cove's, you know, LNG export terminal.
Which we'll talk about next week. Also, we should throw this out, and I don't know this much about this project, but there's also an anhydrous ammonia plant that they want to build in Longview on some contested land. I think it's on a very polluted, almost Superfund site, maybe non-official Superfund site. So let's just talk a little bit about that, because that's another form of frack gas.
Yeah, so we're seeing the fracked gas industry, you know, really do everything they can to find an outlet for their dirty product, whether it's turning it into methanol and then making it into plastics, liquefying it and shipping it overseas for energy use, or, you know, refining it into anhydrous ammonia for fertilizer. Because of the fracking boom that's been experienced across our, you know, inland west, there's just so much effort to find new markets for dirty fracked gas. And we're seeing the impact of that. We're seeing the industry try and create inroads into new markets for their dirty products that, you know, have a lifespan of, you know, not 1 or 2 or 3 years, but 50, 60, 70 years. And so if any of the listeners, you know, read the recent like UN report on climate.
We've got 20 years.
We've got 20 years. And these projects, you know, it's not in their business plan to immediately, you know, shut off the lights and turn off the tap in 20 years. They're looking for, you know, centuries, half a century investments. And that means half a century of pollution in our communities.
Not to say that 20-year goalpost that the UN report just gave us means if we don't stop now. So it seems that this is one of the issues we need to raise in our region and with these companies that, you're really taking us in the wrong direction right now. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, senior organizer with Columbia River Keeper, about Columbia River Keeper's efforts to uncover government deals to underwrite the fossil fuel industry and attempts by the government to circumvent public access to records of immediate public concern. So, Jasmine, let's talk about, first of all, we'll start with the present and then move backwards with some of these weird financial dealings. But let's talk about the Freedom of Information Act that Columbia River Keeper recently filed to get information out of the Department of Energy.
Yeah, so we'll start back in 2017 when we learned that Northwest Innovation Works was looking to the U.S. Department of Energy for a federal loan guarantee to build their proposed methanol refinery. So what that would mean is, you know, if they built the project and some reason went bankrupt, or, you know, couldn't pay their rent, you and I, as you know, taxpayers, would be on the hook because this federal loan guarantee would cover the company's losses.
Just stop for a second. And that sounds totally weird. I mean, actually, the only industry I can ever think of that would look for those kind of federal loan guarantees would be the nuclear power industry, which had a lot of questionable financial dealings. So what business do they have getting a loan guarantee like that?
So these programs have been set up to, you know, support industries, support innovative industries. I think at one, you know, the nuclear industry is far from innovative, but at one point I think they probably enjoyed that title, and I'm glad they don't anymore. It's meant to, you know, spark innovative, you know, clean technology, and really move our economy in a more sustainable direction. I mean, and Northwest Innovation Works, you know, for whatever reason, believes that they are, that they should qualify for that.
Innovation, because they have innovation in their title.
They put innovation in their title, so we should all just believe them at face value. So we looked into this when we learned that they were pursuing this option with the U.S. Department of Energy. We sent a Freedom of Information Act request to Department of Energy to get the application, because we thought the public should know where their tax money is, you know, potentially going. We thought this information is, you know, not only important to, I guess, to the public, but also to local decision makers who are, you know, weighing the options of whether this is a good or bad, bad facility. And in the U.S. Department of Energy responded with a very heavily redacted application that really did not have the information that we were trying to understand, that we were trying to share with the public. And that was information around the greenhouse gas emissions associated with the project, the climate impacts of the project, and, you know, the financial makeup of the company.
Now, just to back up for a second. So for this loan guarantee, why would you bring up issues like greenhouse gas emissions and climate issues?
Well, like I said, this project, you know, these loan guarantee programs are for innovative projects. And this company needs to prove to the public that they are actually innovative and could actually reduce our greenhouse gases. And if they're not willing to disclose that information, you know, then that gives us an indication of how confident, you know, they feel about this project.
It's just like lots of black on the documents.
Lots
is all
black.
Blacked out.
You know, and you have to look at the landscape of what's happening in Washington, D.C. I mean, the Energy Department is run by Secretary Rick Perry. You know, he is has been on record, you know, denying that humans, you know, are the leading cause of climate change. You know, he ran for president and when he ran for president, he called for the abolishment of the U.S. Department of Energy.
And he couldn't remember the name of it.
And he couldn't remember the name of it, yeah, but he did want to abolish it. You know, he was a he helped, you know, really establish the hydraulic fracking industry in Texas. So he is a friend to the industry, and we need to make sure that the decisions that Department of Energy is considering, you know, are done in as much daylight as possible.
So what's the next step now that they sent you a dark document that's mainly black blotches?
Yeah, so we went back and forth with Energy for about 6 months, you know, telling them, you know, this is an inadequate records request. We need more information. You know, they sent us, you know, various timelines and extensions and drug their feet. And it finally got to the point where, you know, we realized that, you know, they were not going to produce this information. They had, you know, violated, you know, the terms of the Freedom of Information Act by not producing this information in a timely manner. And we had no choice but to file a lawsuit against them, because we believe that the public should have information about this project, the world's largest methanol refinery, before permits are made, you know, before, you know, we invest taxpayer dollars into giving them a loan guarantee.
Well, I was just thinking that there is something very innovative about this world's largest methanol refinery. As I understand from going to hearings and talking to a lot of people, this is a process that's never been done before, and nobody knows if it works. So let's talk a little bit about what's the difference between the proposed methanol refineries in Kalama and Port Westward and the ones that exist around the world.
Yeah, so this would be the world's largest methanol refinery, and I can't sort of underscore that enough, because I mean, the reason I say that over and over again is because I really encourage people to go to Kalama and, like, spend some time on this stretch of the Columbia River and ask yourself, like, is this the right place for the world's largest methanol refinery?
Actually, when we were on John Flynn's fishing boat, you pointed out a very interesting fact about that location, because directly across the Columbia River from where they want to build the methanol refinery is the hulk of the Trojan nuclear power plant. Maybe that's why they think it's appropriate. but I found it a certain kind of irony about that.
Right. We're bringing up sort of past energy sources in a way that we probably shouldn't. You know, that community has moved past, you know, Trojan and other sorts of dirty energy, coal terminals, oil terminals, and yet this facility would certainly bring us back in time.
Well, what's one thing that's very interesting that we could see from the water, when you look north, I think it's north of Kalama, and you see the port of Longview, it's kind of a it's not that big compared to like Port of Tacoma, but it's kind of a miniaturized Port of Tacoma. There's a lot of dirty industry there already, and it looks very industrialized, whereas the Port of Kalama has a couple, they have grain terminals, and then there's a chemical facility, I think, at the bottom. But there's a lot of empty space there. There's a lot of beaches. It does not look like an industrialized area. I wonder how much that plays into the concerns of the community in Kalama, and if the community is divided about whether they want to retain a relatively unspoiled riverfront or whether they think it's important to industrialize.
Mm-hmm. I think that you can have both, but you have to have smart industry. Bringing in the world's largest methanol refinery is, I think, doesn't qualify as smart, sustainable industry. And I think the community of Kalama isn't actually all that divided. I mean, they recently had a mayoral race where one candidate ran, on the platform of opposing the methanol refinery, and he won. It's not just actually Kalama that would feel the impacts. The facility needs a 3.1-mile pipeline to connect it to an existing, the existing main line that feeds, Oregon and Northwest Oregon and Washington, and that pipeline requires, community members in Kelso who are outside of the Port of Kalama, district. They're being threatened with eminent domain for this pipeline. So the opposition, is not just in Kalama, but you have, communities along the pipeline route who are outside of the Port of Kalama district that are being impacted by this project. And there's a lot of unfairness in the community because, the Port of Kalama leaders are backing this project, and people who live outside of their district are being impacted.
I think I'm going to go back to Vancouver, Washington, and the struggle with Tesoro Savage. And one of the things that impressed me when I started to go to hearings there was that there was a really unified voice of the city council, even the mayor, who I'd had interesting dealings with several years before. I never thought of him as much of a progressive, but the county commissions, and then of course on the Oregon side, city and county governments up and down the Columbia River, including Portland, were like strongly in solidarity with the opponents of the oil by train terminal there. When I went to the first hearing I went to for the methanol refinery in Kalama, I didn't hear a single elected official or port commissioner who opposed the project. And it was a little bit disconcerting. And the other thing that really struck me, though I'm getting used to it now as I spend more time further north in Washington, that there was incredible demonization of the opponents of the methanol refinery. And they were called all kinds of bizarre anti-communist, really weird things. I mean, this whole stereotyping of them. So I get the sense, and this was about almost 2 years ago when I went to that hearing, that the community was divided, though I'm not exactly sure along what lines it's being divided.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that this is a project that, when at first blush, it did gather, garner a lot of community support. Like we talked about earlier, the gas industry enjoys this very, friendly image in the Northwest that we are slowly unraveling because we're learning more about fracking and the impacts of fracking and how the impacts of methane gas on our climate. But that's slowly unraveling, and it's unraveling faster in some communities than others. And I think that that was part of it. They also came in, Northwest Innovation Works, with this very green image. They were passing out T-shirts, green T-shirts with a little, planet Earth and a smiley face and, Citizens for a Green Economy.
Everybody have a smiley face?
Yeah, the smiley face on the Earth.
I'm always suspicious of smiley faces.
Yeah. So, from if you just looked at it, you couldn't actually tell who was pro-environment and who wasn't, based on what shirts people were wearing and things. So there was a lot of mixed messaging happening from the industry or from Northwest Innovation Works. It's taken time to walk that back, for community members to walk that back and really disclose the actual impacts of the project. To Kalama's waterfront, to people who, go to Kalama to fish and to recreate on the river. A lot of people didn't realize that there was, potential for eminent domain with this pipeline associated with the project. That really turns people off to this project. And then a lot of folks who are, sort of feel like they're just, economically minded are learning more about the finances of this company and how they're actually trying to get as much public money to build their project. And that is turning people off as well. So the more people learn, the more they oppose it. And we found out this out with coal export too, you know, the more through like focus groups and polling, you know, the more people learned about the issue, the more they opposed it. But at headline level, you know, the community could appear divided.
Well, who is Northwestern Innovation Works? Who's behind them?
It's the Northwestern Innovation Works. If you've never heard them before, you are just like everyone else because they are a new company. They formed exclusively to turn fracked gas into methanol in the Pacific Northwest and export it overseas to China. They have this new sort of technology that they're proposing called ultra-low emissions. Again, sounds really great. Has never been used at this scale before.
That's the innovation there.
Yeah.
So they don't know if it works, basically.
They don't know if it works. There was a small test facility in Australia that is no longer operating that used this technology, that used this kind of refining process. But again, they're not in business anymore, so we can't even look to them to see how things are going. But we were going to trust this company to build the world's largest methanol refinery on our shores here in our backyards. And then who makes up Northwest Innovation Works? You know, their largest backer is the Chinese Academy of Sciences, which is a branch of the Chinese government. This methanol would go to China. It's supposed to go to a port in Dalian, China, and be used to make plastics. So this is a very interesting and intricate fossil fuel project. If people have been tracking fossil fuel projects on the Columbia River for the past decade or more, I think this one has the most sort of layers to unpack and sort of paths to follow to really understand who's backing it, where's the money coming from, what are the impacts, and what is actually, you know, the sort of pollution supply chain.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio and in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, about the world's largest methanol refinery being proposed to be built in Kalama, Washington, by a Chinese-backed company called Northwest Innovation Works and some of the sleight of hands that they're doing. One of the things when I started learning about Northwest Innovation Works that I found very intriguing is its colorful CEO, V. Gottlieb. And I've been actually trying to get an interview with him, but it doesn't seem to be happening. He's a slippery guy, but I understand he's had an interesting checkered past in terms of financing other projects, I think particularly in Idaho.
Yeah, I think one of the ways that you can, you know, track down, you know, who these people are and what they're up to is to look at the past ventures. V. Gottlieb was part of a failed energy venture in Pocatello, Idaho that was really widely documented at the local level as, you know, seems very similar to what's happening in Kalama. Company comes in, promises the moon, and then leaves the company with a vacant building and a lot of debt. And I think that's particularly concerning here in Kalama with Northwest Innovation Works because they are asking for so much federal funding for their project. They're asking for so much public investment, and we should be cautious, and we should scrutinize the history of all of the past, you know, all of the you know, the past players or the current players and their past history to make sure that we, you know, are spending our money wisely.
So what are some of these sources of income that they're trying to generate?
Yeah, so we first, there's the federal loan guarantee, like we talked about earlier, you know, trying to make sure, you know, asking, you know, the U.S. government and in turn the U.S. taxpayers to hold the bag in case things go wrong and the company needs to pack up and leave and we'll be left with the debt. That's one route that they are considering. The other route that they are looking for is through what's called a build grant. This is the Port of Kalama, on behalf of Northwest Innovation Works, has applied for a federal build grant. These are transportation dollars. They fund, you know, roads and highways and, you know, interstate overpasses and things like, you know, that we use every day. Well, the Port of Kalama and Northwest Innovation Works think that this federal money should build the road into Northwest Innovation Works. It's currently kind of a gravelly road, certainly not up to snuff for a big industrial operation, and pay for half of the dock that Northwest Innovation Works needs to ship their methanol out.
And this is describe this dock that they would be building.
Yeah, so a dock on the Columbia, an industrial dock on the Columbia River is, you know, 200-300 feet long. It involves hundreds of pilings, and they are huge. They create huge impacts to, you know, the aquatic life in that area. And this is a Klama is an area that is, you know, more known for its fishing than it is for its, you know, industrial waterfront. So the impacts to the aquatic habitat in this area, you know, would be severe. It's the proposed methanol refinery is only a half a mile from the mouth of the Klama River, which again is great, you know, world class fishing. It's very close to, you know, some of the sloughs, the off channel habitat that the Columbia River, that the lower Columbia River, you know, needs to maintain in order to have, you know, good habitat for juvenile salmon before they head out, you know, to the ocean.
So what are some of the other ways, sort of unconventional ways, that they're trying to finance this project?
Yeah, so when the facility went, it was pursuing their project in Tacoma, there was a huge backlash from the Tacoma community. And one of the representatives, the state representatives from Tacoma, tried to introduce a bill in the Washington state legislature saying, you know, you, Northwest Innovation Works and methanol, you know, refining companies in general, you don't get to use the tax exempt or the tax exemptions that other corporations and industries get to use, you know, when you're building your products. And you know, this is a tax exemption that Northwest Innovation Works is depending on heavily, you know, to make their project viable. And they did not like that they were being asked to pay their state and local sales tax. And they certainly, and V. Godley and others went to Olympia, and they, unfortunately, they successfully stopped that bill from becoming law. So what that means for Klama is, you know, Northwest Innovation Works is not going to be paying the state and local sales taxes that you and I pay when we go to Klama or we go to Vancouver or anywhere in Washington and buy products. So it, you know, when it comes to the construction of their facility, they're looking at, you know, tax exemptions of up to, you know, $143 million that's not going back into the local and state coffers. It's just going into sort of savings for this company.
And this is a state where there's no income tax. So, I mean, the state's very dependent on sales tax.
Absolutely.
What are some of the other unconventional ways that they're trying to get financed?
So we saw about 2 years ago another company called Stone Peak Investments. So that's like a retirement firm that you can, you know, set up your 401ks through and whatnot. Stone Peak has a big contract with the Washington, you know, public retirees network, you know, their version of PERS if you're in Oregon. And let me just walk this here. So Stone Peak is this private investment firm that deals a lot with retirement funds. They have a contract to help manage, you know, Washington State public employees' retirement funds. And Northwest Innovation Works was trying to get Stone Peak to invest in their project, which would sort of, if you kind of triangulate that out, it would mean that Washington State public employees are invested in this methanol refinery. So, you know, the outcome of a successful methanol refinery would be good for state employees financially because their retirement funds are tied to it. And that's just a bizarre conflict of interest. You know, you have permitting, you know, state permitting agencies who are tied to their public employee retirement plans. You know, you have school teachers who are tied to this public employee's retirement plan. You have, you know, health officials who are tied to this public employee's plan. You don't really want their retirement fund invested in the outcome of such a contentious issue. And also, you know, from we shouldn't be investing in these types of projects.
Well, it actually seems like some of the people that would be having the retirement funds invested in the project would be ones who might be making decisions about permits.
Exactly.
How is this happening? Is Stone Peak actually investing in NWIW?
To my knowledge, they have not made the formal investment, but this is just one of the number of sort of bizarre ways that Northwest Innovation Works is trying to get someone else to back this project. And you remember that Northwest Innovation Works, they're a new company, they're an LLC, but their primary backer is the Chinese Academy of Sciences, which is a branch of the Chinese government. So it's a really bizarre way of, a foreign corporation, a corporation owned by a foreign government, trying to find ways for U.S. taxpayers to cover the cost of this, new facility and absorb, the air pollution.
Well, we'll get to the air pollution in just a moment, because the finances of this are also they're as intriguing as the environmental impacts. But it seems to me that that's not the usual way for a business when they're coming into a location to finance themselves, that usually they have more solid financial backers, kind of corporate backers and the things that work. They're not expecting everything to come out of the public funds. And it seems that Northwest Innovation Works is expecting basically the taxpayers of Washington and the United States to back them.
Yeah, and I'm far from, an expert in energy industry finances. It's certainly not what I do in my day-to-day job, but I do spend a lot of time looking at these fossil fuel projects that have come to the Columbia River. And I have not seen a project, a fossil fuel project, try so many, try and pull so many levers to get either public financing or public backing or loan guarantees to make their project happen. Tesoro Savage, that's a big corporation. They had the money to make that project happen. Fortunately, it didn't meet, Washington standards, so that project was shut down. The coal terminal in Longview is backed by, an equity firm based in Colorado.
Don't they also, I get the feeling that Millennium is also kind of on shaky grounds financially.
Yeah, they sit in an investment portfolio right now that we're hoping will be opened up soon by some investor, and they will realize the mounting permit denials, and they will decide that it's no longer a good idea to keep investing. But they do sit in an investment portfolio already, but for a company based in Colorado. So Northwest Innovation Works, on the other hand, does not sit in any investment firm. They don't carry the name of a big energy corporation. They are, doing some very complicated footwork in order to find the financing and the backing to make this project work, all the while, promising people locally that this is a great idea. And I think that's sort of what we see. That's the thread that we've seen through all of these fossil fuel fights, is companies, they come in with these big promises and they make a lot of friends really quickly. And then over time, as the truth comes out, those so-called friends, back away and change their position about the project. And I'm confident that this is no different.
Well, actually, that's what happened in Astoria with Oregon LNG, as far as I can recall, that it wound up that they had no backing. And the people that had been backing them, when they saw how much trouble they were starting to have getting their permits, when the communities in Clatsop County started fighting back, that's kind of what really pulled the plug on Oregon LNG eventually. Mm-hmm. So do you see, it seems like there is a pattern, even though it seems that Northwest Innovation Works is taking this to an extreme that we've never seen before.
Yeah, I mean, the more that people learn, whether it's about fracking or the financial backing of the project or the eminent domain required for the pipeline, the more people oppose Northwest Innovation Works. I think it's really important for community members to learn as much as they can about these projects, because what is presented at face value by the corporations, we have seen time and time again, is simply not true. There's simply no, it's lipstick on a pig. We've seen companies backtrack from their initial project proposals all the time. Northwest Innovation Works, is not too far from Longview. Longview has the proposed coal terminal. When they initially came to town, they proposed a 5 to 7 million ton coal export terminal. And through, public records, which is, part of what our lawsuit with the Department of Energy is about, is we learned that they were actually proposing something much larger, but they didn't want to tell the public that, because that would be too much. It would cause too much scrutiny and too much opposition. So their plan was to get a smaller terminal permitted and then scale up, you know, while people weren't looking. So we've seen, unfortunately, we've just seen so much misinformation from these fossil fuel industries that we know to look, think twice.
Do you think that Northwest Innovation Works is even shakier than Millennium and Tesoro Savage and some of the other players, Pembina? I mean, there's been a number of them that have come and gone from the Southwest Washington and Northwest Oregon, and Pembina is now down taking over Jordan Cove. But do you think that Northwest Innovation Works has even less grounds to stand on? I mean, one thing I find interesting about them is that they're a limited liability corporation, which, I mean, you and I could start one of those tomorrow, I think. And
oh, we could do it in 10 minutes.
That's right.
Yeah, we'd just hop on the Secretary of State website, and we could just come up with an email address and $100, and we could have our own LLC. So I think that they are on shaky grounds, but I think that what is different is the gas industry overall is not on shaky grounds in America. The gas industry, you know, enjoys vast approval and from people who don't know the climate impacts of methane, who haven't seen the local impacts of fracking. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of decision makers, even progressive decision makers who are Democratic, you know, environmental decision makers that aren't connecting the dots between fracked gas and climate change. They're so exclusively focused on coal and climate change, when the reality is, you know, when you look at the climate impacts, coal and fracked gas, you know, are essentially the same. You know, maybe you win a few points on, you know, by switching to gas, but we're not hoping for, you know, 1 or 2 point gain. We need massive climate, you know, progress, not just you know, baby steps.
Well, actually, let's talk a little bit about why frack gas in particular has so many methane leaks. So I want to throw another thing in. I'm not sure if you have checked out the draft supplemental impact statement for Tacoma LNG, which we're going to be talking about next week on the show, along with Jordan Cove. In that draft environmental impact statement, which is written by the same company that wrote the original environmental impact statement that was torpedoed by the Clean Air Board of Puget Sound, they are saying that if you use gas from British Columbia, there's no emissions. But if you use gas from Colorado, there's many more. No, there's not as many fugitive leaks, whereas in Colorado frack gas is way more leakage from the wellhead to the point of arrival. And I find it interesting that they're saying that because British Columbia and the Canadian government have stronger regulations about leakage, it's not happening. I'm not sure if this is anything you've been following, but I saw that in there. I thought, I wonder if that's true, because it certainly didn't sound like what I've heard from some people I respect, like Sandra Steingraber and Tarika Powell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what's happening in Tacoma is there's a proposed LNG, liquefied natural gas facility that, you know, could, if built, replace some of the bunker fuel that is used in the Panamax vessels that come in and out of the port of Tacoma. So the supplemental environmental impact statement, like you said, focused on the greenhouse gas impacts of switching from bunker fuel to LNG fuel for these ships, and it was a very bizarre conclusion, saying that there would be climate benefits if the gas came from Canada or from British Columbia, but no climate benefits. In fact, it would be worse if the gas came from the U.S.
And in fact, they wouldn't approve the permit if the gas was coming from the U.S.
Yeah, and so the bizarre thing about that is we don't control what's in our pipelines. It's a bi-directional pipeline. I mean, maybe a little less so in Tacoma because it's closer to the Canadian border, but especially for Kalama, where we are fed, you know, at any given time from either of these, you know, fracking, you know, hubs. So to say, you know, to guarantee, no company, I think, could make a guarantee that all of their gas was, you know, coming from one specific well. And you know, I'm not entirely sure about what's happening up in Canada, but I do know that we are very lax in our methane release rules here in the United States, especially under the Trump administration, where we are rolling back some of the progress that we had made under the previous administration. But the picture of gas is a lot more complicated than of coal, where you can just look at the dirty smoke coming out of the smokestack, measure the carbon dioxide and say that's the impact. With gas, you have to look at the release that happens along at the wellhead itself, because not all the gas is captured. You have to look at the releases along the pipeline route and at every single compressor station along the way, because those are all places where gas leaks out. And then, of course, at the facility itself and then its end use, whether it's an olefin for plastics or burned for electricity, you have to look at the comprehensive picture for gas in order to really get a good understanding of what the emissions truly are.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on Cable Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And we're talking today with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, who's senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, about the proposed world's largest methanol refinery in Kalama, Washington, and the latest status of its finances, among other things. But right now we're talking about the fugitive emissions. Kalama, the methanol refinery in Kalama, is also having a life cycle analysis that required a redo of the environmental impact statement to include life cycle analysis of all the gas emissions. It's being done, you told me the other day, by the same company that did the Tacoma one. So are you hopeful at all that there's going to be any improvements in the new EIS that comes out for the Kalama methanol refinery?
So I am confused after reading, you know, excerpts of the Tacoma supplemental environmental impact statement, which focused on the greenhouse gas life cycle of that proposal. I'm unsure what to think about what to expect in Kalama. I mean, it was a really important victory. So what happened basically in the process is the final environmental impact statement was completed. Columbia Riverkeeper, Center for Biological Diversity, and Sierra Club appealed a number of the findings in the final EIS. We were represented by Earth Justice, and and one of the things that we appealed and said was inadequate in that final environmental impact statement was the greenhouse gas analysis, which only looked at this, you know, 92-acre footprint at the site itself, and 3 miles out with the ships. We wanted that comprehensive look at what happens when you frack, what happens when you transport thousands of miles and go through various compressor stations, and what happens when you take the ships all the way to China, because that's obviously how the planet looks at climate emissions. So we should look at climate emissions that way. So we won. The court agreed with us, and the court required Northwest Innovation Works to do this supplemental review. We're still waiting for it to come out. But it is very similar to what was just released for the Tacoma LNG facility. I think that it was a victory that we were able to have a conversation around the life cycle of gas, because it's so much more complex than the life cycle of other fossil fuels. But I'm not entirely convinced that this is going to be a review that really discloses the impacts, especially when you get sort of bizarre things like, if you could guarantee that the gas comes from this one basin and not this other basin, then you're fine. But the reality is we as consumers, and Northwest Innovation Works as a gas consumer, could not make that guarantee.
Actually, I'm thinking about a conversation I had with Taria Powell a couple months ago where she was describing where the gas comes from, because she says people always are asking her, is my gas fracked? And she it's all probability. It's kind of like deciding on which hurricane's impacts were directly related to climate change, like, which, of course, you can't do that, though you can say that the conditions of climate change are making hurricanes worse. But we can't say that, for instance, the last hurricane hit last week, that it's all because of climate change. So she was basically saying that's the same thing is true with gas. There's no way to know where our gas is coming from. I wonder, I'm going to be very curious to see if the NWIW environmental impact statement has that same proviso, that if you get all your gas from British Columbia, you're fine. I wonder, how does one counter the argument that's being put forward in the draft environmental impact statement?
Well, there's a lot of ways that people approach calculating methane releases. So methane is, you know, a very potent greenhouse gas. It's, you know, more potent than carbon dioxide, and it's what is the primary, you know, component of fracked gas. Just a little chemistry science lesson for people. And we are still every day learning how to calculate methane emissions and what methane leaks are for various you know, for various wellheads, for various pipelines, for various facilities. So it's a very challenging and new and, you know, consistently, you know, always developing process. So we need to be using the best sort of available science. And unfortunately, you know, the science that is, you know, the most innovative and the most sort of up to date isn't coming from the federal government right now. It's coming from university researchers. And but if, you know, the Northwest Innovation Works supplemental environmental impact statement on greenhouse gases relies on numbers from the federal government, well, those are numbers that have been heavily influenced by the industry, given, you know, who runs the federal government right now, and, you know, Rick Perry with the U.S. Department of Energy and his background. So it's an unfortunate thing that we are, may not be able to agree with everything in the report, and we can always appeal it if we don't and ask for other experts to weigh in. But I think when we get down to these numbers, sure, we can like give ourselves headaches and go back and forth for days. But irregardless, you know, we are looking at needing to shift away from all fossil fuels. We need to be investing in clean, renewable technologies, not fracked gas technologies. So, you know, we can split hairs around numbers, but at the end of the day, you know, this is an investment in a new massive fossil fuel company that, you know, is going to take Washington and the Pacific Northwest backwards. I mean, this is a huge amount of gas. This one facility would use more fracked gas every day than every Washington state power plant, a gas-fired power plant combined, would increase their gas consumption by one third. The entire state would just immediately, you know, increase by a third. So, you know, when you get to those kinds of numbers, you know, we could split hairs on methane leak percentage rates, but that sort of dilutes the argument that what we really need is clean energy infrastructure. We need investments in clean energy technology, and we need, you know, programs like this federal loan guarantee program through the U.S. Department of Energy to be backing those truly innovative, truly renewable, you know, projects, and not, you know, these fracked gas monstrosities.
So back to that BUILD grant that NWIW and the Port of Tacoma was trying to get. Have they gotten one yet? Because you've told me earlier that they tried five times and were turned down.
The Port of Kalama.
Yeah.
So yeah, the BUILD grant is a transportation grant that the Port of Kalama has applied for on behalf of Northwest Innovation Works. They've applied in years past under previous programs and have not received it. They applied this year in August of 2018, so we are still waiting to see if they qualify. You know, but we're hoping that they don't. We're hoping that
Rick Perry's the Secretary of the Interior.
Well, this would be under, you know, the Department of Transportation because it's a transportation grant, but yeah, you know, the influence is broad.
I forget who that person is, but it's nobody who's, I think, our friend either.
Yeah. You know, we're hoping that they look at that and they say, you know, this company comes in and says they want to build a $2 billion facility. You know, why are they asking U.S. taxpayers to build their half-mile road and to build half of their dock? You know, hopefully we've got some level of scrutiny that if a company says that they are capable of building, a $2 billion project, that they could at least pave their own road.
Well, what can listeners do to get on board with dealing with this hulk that is being proposed? And it's just like 30, 40 miles north of us here, from north of Cebu, actually. It's pretty close.
Mm-hmm. So we are expecting the release of that supplemental environmental impact statement, you know, by the end of 2018, maybe early 2019. And that's going to come with a comment period where we need folks from all across the region to step up and submit comments, you know, asking for the best climate science and for true, you know, clean, renewable technology and not this investment in the fracked gas industry. We need to be, you know, removing their stranglehold on our economy, not sort of giving them even more grip. So we're going to be asking you all to participate in that comment period and likely public hearing. So that means, you know, carpooling from Portland and surrounding areas to Kalama, or sometimes they hold these hearings in Longview because it's got a big venue. And, you know, we have the Northwest, you know, thanks to many of the listeners, has a reputation of just crushing public comment periods, you know, hundreds of thousands of public comments. And when a hearing comes, you know, you show up in droves and you give great public testimony. And we're going to need you to continue that through the end of this, you know, project's life.
And all you, everybody who's been up to the Millennium hearings, and there was there were several Kalama methanol hearings in the last couple of years. You're probably familiar now with that whole landscape of Longview. So, and we'll stay tuned about this. So, Jasmine, how about we check back towards the end of the year? We can do an update, and once the EIS, the draft EIS, is released again.
Great. Thanks, Barbara.
Well, thanks a whole lot for joining us. And we've been talking today with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, Senior Organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. If you're just tuning in and you would like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, we'll talk more about frack gas projects in the Northwest, this time LNG in Coos Bay and Tacoma, with guest Regna Merritt with Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and Claudia Riedner, co-founder of Redefining Tacoma. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Bob Dylan. Thanks for listening.
Carina, Carina, get where you've been so long. Carina, Carina, get where you've been so long. I've been worried about you, baby. Baby, please come home. I got a bird that whistles. I got a bird that sings.